not all bacillus, like I said, are the same. So they can have different characteristics. One bacillus strain might be better at reducing or improving gut barrier function. Another might be better at inhibiting avian pathogenic E. coli. I've just tended to use a combination of two or three together because you kind of get a broader spectrum of what you might control and help to improve the health.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show. Today, I am here with our guest again, Dr. Laverne. Welcome to the show.
Hello. It's good to be here again.
I'm so happy that you're able to join again so we can hear more about some different areas of feed additives and in the bacillus space. I'm always so interested to hear about some of the recent advancements and what people know about their products or just area that they're working in. So can you tell us a little bit about just bacillus in general, what it can do, like why you're interested in it?
Oh, that's a lot to answer right there. You know, we've gone to where so many of our poultry diets, commercial poultry diets, have a bacillus probiotic in them. You know, it's probably harder to find diets without bacillus than, you know, because they all have it, right? We have learned so much that they are not just for pathogen inhibition, which is an excellent trait they have, thank goodness, and we can use them for pathogen inhibition, but there are so many other things that bacillus do. They can produce enzymes, our amylases, lipases, lots of different enzymes that can help with nutrient digestibility and improve feed conversion. Of course, they can produce antibiotic substances and other metabolites to help prevent infections, whether they're bacteria or fungal, we can prevent infections. But as we learn more about these bacillus, and of course, not all bacillus strains are the same, they're different. We've learned that some bacillus will increase expression of tight junction proteins in the gut to help improve gut barrier function, reduce, you know, leaky gut, help prevent leaky gut and reducing systemic disease. We also know that they can help out the immune system. We can measure cytokine production or look at the way that bacillus can influence cytokine production. Obviously, we would like them to reduce the inflammatory cytokine production. And if they can increase the anti-inflammatory cytokine production, that's a great trait as well. So we kind of get all of that, you know, preventing leaky gut, maintaining a good gut barrier function, helping overall health improve and working with the immune system, as well as the pathogen reduction at the same time. And then, you know, the enzymes there to help improve digestibility of what we're feeding them. And of course, from a nutritionist standpoint, that's excellent to know that we can use bacillus for that. Because it really, in the commercial production, you know, the nutritionist is going to have responsibility for putting probiotics into the diet. And when they can experience a benefit that can help their cost and improve feed efficiency, that's really going to be a benefit to not only the health of the bird, but the nutrition as well.
Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to dig deeper into the poultry health challenges you face. By gathering scientific evidence, they identify the most effective combinations of natural ingredients that improve animal health. Visit naturalbiologics.com/poultry to see the newest research in both turkeys and chickens.
Yeah. So I know that the different strains have their own specific activity. Is Is it recommended? I mean, within a product, my group has found that, you know, more complex formulations seem to have a better ability to improve whatever parameter you're looking at, production, mortality, whatever. But are these products formulated to put together multiple? Are they single strain? I mean, what's kind of your best advice for using them given the diverse effects? Is it find one that has an activity that you like, or maybe find one that could do a bunch of different things kind of based on a need?
I think that, you know, a lot of times we're using these bacillus for prevention, and not all bacillus, like I said, are the same. So they can have different characteristics. One bacillus strain might be better at reducing or improving gut barrier function. Another might be better at inhibiting avian pathogenic E. coli. I've just tended to use a combination of two or three together because you kind of get a broader spectrum of what you might control and help to improve the health. Now, there are some bacillus I've worked with that have just kind of been really workhorses and maybe could do the job themselves. But, you know, I kind of find that probably across the industry in the feed additives, we're probably using more than one bacillus species or strain or isolate, whatever, in a product. Because again, you know, they're for prevention a lot of time, but also to, take care of some problems or challenges that are there. So I think we just find that because they have different characteristics, it's great that we can use a combination of a few different together in the same formula.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. So on the evaluation side, it can be really difficult commercially. I mean, you have a lot of birds, a lot of bird replicates, if you will, but how do you evaluate the intended effect or efficacy? Like how do we know?
Sure. So that actually starts when you're trying to find the bacillus to go into your products, correct? And just as kind of what we do is, you know, go into the environment that poultry are in. You kind of collect targeted samples that you can isolate bacillus from environment or even from the intestines of poultry themselves. And then you isolate these bacillus that are there, and they can go through a whole big screening process. And it's not probably the first bacillus you isolate. You know, it could take a while. Just as an example, in our current product, there were more than 1,000 bacillus isolates that started the process and was narrowed down to about 6. And then we selected two to go in. And these are novel bacillus, selected two to go into our product. And in order to do that, you know, we had set set a series of criteria that those bacillus had to meet. And one of them was to help improve gut barrier function. So you go into the lab, a lot of in vitro assays to screen these bacillus to see if they'll have the characteristics we're looking for. So to look for gut barrier function improvement, we used an assay called transepithelial electrical resistance, or TEER. You use a cell line. Put the bacillus in with the cell line use the TEER to measure your electrical resistance. And of course, if there's more resistance, that should translate to more or a better gut barrier function. Of course, less resistance, you know, letting things through. More compromised gut barrier. And you can do this with a challenge, maybe with an LPS, lipopolysaccharide challenge or not. This assay is not just for bacillus. We can evaluate different feed additives kind of in the same way with the challenge, maybe a butyrate or, you know, just all the bacillus or, you know, just whatever we're looking at. And actually could look at different combinations of feed additives that might go into a diet together, maybe the bacillus and the butyrate, and do a challenge in this type of assay and look and see how those components might affect gut barrier function. So in the screening process, we can evaluate gut barrier function in vitro like that. And then we also want to make sure we're going to do good things with the immune system. So again, you know, go back into the in vitro assays and do a challenge again, whatever that is, maybe LPS again, it's pretty common, with your cell line. And, you know, just look to see at the cytokine production. Are we increasing anti-inflammatory cytokines? Or are we decreasing the inflammatory cytokines? So, you know, those are just a couple of assays there we can do to look at gut barrier function and working with the immune system, and use those to kind of predict what should happen in the bird itself. And so, and then of course, we want to go in vivo once we've screened these bacillus and have positive results in the lab, because that's where we really have to see the results, is in the bird. And of course, you know, and we can do controlled research trials with challenges, see what happens there. Of course, we can collect the microbiome out of those birds and use that microbiome in these assays, the TEER assay or whatever other challenge we're looking at as well, to look at how they're working in the live bird as well. And then, you know, the enzyme portion of what the bacillus can do, the enzyme production, of course, then we can evaluate the feed conversion there and protein and energy digestibility in the live bird. So it's a long process, detailed process in order to get, but, you know, that's what you need to do. You want to get what's going to help the industry the most and be the most effective.
It's got to feel good, though, that you ended up with some targets at the end of these processes, because that is a ton of work and blood, sweat, and tears, I'm assuming, from the scientific team.
Well, we have an excellent partner that we work with. And yes, they've spent a lot of time into, you know, locating or finding these bacillus and putting them through the process. And it's a never-ending process. Just because we have bacillus in our current product doesn't mean we're stopping, right? The continuous looking for more bacillus that can fit into the program and, you know, be effective in another way or more effective than what we've found so far, that's a continuous process. It's happening all the time. So.
Yeah, that's exciting. You always have something to look forward to. And then, you know, the beta version of all your products to roll out. So the next and the right. Next. So you mentioned that some of the bacillus might have an ability to do pathogen inhibition. I know people are really excited about anything foodborne or other poultry pathogen related, if a probiotic or other bacteria might have that effect. So what have you found so far for these bacillus products that you're working with or others?
And actually, I think the list of pathogens that we're seeing some inhibition efficacy is growing. But I guess traditionally, or maybe I think traditionally, what we've looked at is avian pathogenic E. coli and Clostridium perfringens. Now we're seeing more that might be effective at inhibiting Salmonella. And really now there's quite a bit of work out there looking at Enterococcus saccharum as well.
Oh.
So yeah, and that's why not only inhibiting that, like as an example, Enterococcus saccharum inhibition, but also having the bacillus to prevent or leaky gut would be, could be a huge deal right there in helping to prevent kinky back. So anyway, so we're looking at pathogen inhibition. Those are just some of the pathogens. And, you know, there's several in vitro assays that you can do that. Auger well diffusion, right? You incubate your bacillus in the auger, add the pathogen, and look at the zone of inhibition. You're measuring those zone of inhibitions on your plates. We can also do co-culturing assays, right? We grow the bacillus and the pathogen together and do the plating, you know, and count the pathogen load to see, you know, what we've done to prevent that. You know, which bacillus are doing a better job at preventing or inhibiting the growth of the pathogens. And then, of course, I like to go in vivo again. And in controlled research trials, you know, we can do some pathogen challenges there, or we can just do the natural pathogens that might be coming from the litter or the environment. But we do some field work as well. And we'll, as an example, just kind of before a customer goes on product, take some intestinal samples and look at the pathogen loads. And we call that our baseline. And then after, you know, three or four flocks might go through the same complex. So 6 months later or so, maybe we go back and can collect some more intestinal samples and compare the pathogen load prior to going on a probiotic compared to where they are when we come back. Look at the pathogen loads and, you know, just continuously do that, you know, a couple times a year or however, you know, we feel that that particular production needs to be monitored. So there's, you know, of course, lots of ways. We have all the lab capabilities to measure the pathogens and can the bacillus inhibit those and prevent their growth. And then, of course, we really need to know what it does in the field or in the live bird to make sure it's translating from the lab to live production.
Yeah, that the process is rigorous.
It is.
Not for the faint of heart is what I'm gathering, but it's true for a lot of fields.
That's true, yes.
So when you decide to follow a bacillus strain, you've mentioned a few of the characteristics that you're interested in, but there might be some that you're looking for and some that you just absolutely don't want. I mean, anything that could cause a problem, obviously you don't want, but what are some of the key things that you're screening for?
So again, I guess I kind of go back to what I started talking about, you know, looking for targeted samples to find your bacillus. Okay. And then of course you want to put them through some of the assays I mentioned, you know, depending on what characteristics you're looking for. So, you know, the isolates, once we obtain the isolates, they can go through TEER to look at gut integrity. You know, we can do the other challenges to look at their cytokine production. And then, of course, we're going to look at the pathogen inhibition as well. And so those are functions we want in the bacillus, but there are also characteristics that we do not want. So a lot of, some whole genome sequencing of the bacillus, because we want to make sure they themselves do not have any virulence factors, that they are not pathogenic in any way. So we, you know, obviously don't want them doing something negative. So we look for those kind of things. We also want to make sure that they're good biomass producers, right? So we can grow them to have enough to put into the feed. We also want to make sure that they can sporulate. Of course, we want our bacillus in the spore form when we put it into the feed so it can survive our pelleting process to get to the bird. We also want to make sure, you know, that they're gut stable, you know, look at how effective they are at different levels of acidity, different pH levels. Make sure they're going to survive everything that can happen and get to where they need to be most effective. So like I said earlier, it can be a pretty intense process by the time you get through all the in vitro. And then, like I said, in vivo screening, looking at the characteristics of the bacillus themselves to make sure, like I said, they're not pathogenic or virulent and make sure they'll grow well and sporulate and get to where they need to be. And then, of course, we need to do the in vivo work as well and make sure, you know, are we seeing the increase in digestibility, nutrient digestibility that we say we're going to see when we do some in vitro assays? You know, are we seeing the pathogen inhibition really in live birds? Because that's, again, where they have to work.
So at the very end of this process, you end up with a feeding recommendation, I'm sure based on titration or other studies. Do you feel like your feeding recommendations always match with what you find on the scientific side? I mean, sometimes I feel like you might have to add a little bit more to get better activity, but it may not be a practical level to feed. So how do you balance at the end what to give the birds?
So yes, because if you look across the industry and across the research, you will see a lot of different recommendations, usually in CFUs, colony forming units per gram. You see a lot of recommendations. So the partners that we work with have actually done quite a bit of dose titration research over the years, and actually have done some most recently with the specific bacillus. And these are Bacillus velezensis that we have in this product that we commercially use. And actually, I found it's a pretty low CFUs per gram that's been very effective. The total product will have about 150,000 CFUs per gram, but you will see a lot higher load in across all different products and research. And yeah, I don't know where, you know, all the numbers have come up with. I mean, hopefully there's a lot of dose titrations, and I guess it can go back to not all bacillus are the same. I have no idea where to go with the levels we're seeing in some of these products. And, you know, I just don't know their research or their backing behind, you know, the loads that they need. But we do find that there are times that challenges, the level of challenge may require more CFUs per gram. You know, maybe it's different phases of growth. You know, a lot of times in the starter phase, they just don't eat as much food. So we might use a higher CFUs there in their diet compared to the finisher when they're eating a lot more total feed. And then in the end, kind of it might even out that they're actually consuming the same amount or more similar CFUs per gram just based on their rate of feed intake. There's a lot of variation out there in the industry as to the inclusion rates.
Yeah, definitely. And from a scientific side, like you said, there might be a reason to change it, but then you got to get the feed mill to agree with you and then the producer with the cost. So,
right. And I find, I guess, a lot of them, you know, when we add the carriers, right, we're somewhere between a half a pound to a 1 pound per ton of, you know, inclusion rate. And, you know, that obviously can vary based on what a mill needs and what they're capable of using. So we can alter the CFUs per gram.
Oh, sure.
And they'll still have the same half a pound or 1 pound inclusion rate at the mill, which is good. Yeah. There. You
know, perfect.
Make things a little easier for the mill and the nutritionist.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Boehringer Ingelheim, health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International, creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything about bacillus or choosing or the research that you wanted to highlight or that we missed during our chat today?
I think it's just emphasizing things we've said. You know, bacillus can do more and do more than just pathogen inhibition. Pathogen inhibition is very important, but there are other characteristics, and this is not a complete list, you know, what I've talked about. You know, gut barrier function and working with the immune system, and enzymes. You know, that's not a complete list. And thank goodness we like to learn. So we're learning more all the time about bacillus. And, you know, they're very abundant. We're finding more and looking for some that might be more effective and have other characteristics that we can combine with what we're currently using to be even more effective. So it's just an endless, like most things, an endless science that we're putting into our feed and to improve the health of birds. And it's just, and then I guess at the same time, you have to make sure they're not going to do any harm. So that's why we have to screen them for bad characteristics as well, which all in all, it's all very important that we screen good and bad to do what's best to help out the industry the most.
Well, so I know you're talking about bacillus and animals, but just to wrap up, do you have a favorite probiotic that you take just because you're in the area? I feel like you'd be all over that. Like yogurt, maybe?
I do eat yogurt almost every day.
Yeah.
But no, I don't have a specific one. You know, and that's kind of, maybe it's my thinking, because in poultry, we can be so targeted at the pathogens we're trying to control that I feel like, yeah, there's ways to do that in humans. But I just feel like I just kind of buy one.
Yeah.
I do take them. But I, you know, just feel like, oh, we can't get a specific in humans. And I guess we can for the most part. No, we're not going to collect our intestines and that kind of thing. But we have other ways to look at our microbiome and what's in it. But, you know, the microbiome varies so much between people and households. And, you know, it's like, yeah, there are cases where they can make a specific probiotic for somebody based on, you know, a disease or, you know, what their microbiome needs. But I'm not there. Thank goodness. I think I'm good and I can just buy one off the shelf. But it's a whole different, I think, a whole different product in humans versus animals, because we can be so much more targeted across, you know, a complex of, you know, a broiler complex or a turkey complex, where humans, not so much.
Wild West.
Yes.
I've honestly thought, looking in the store or online, that I know more about potential poultry products and probiotics than I do about the ones that humans might take. So it kind of makes you back off for a second, because I really like to information seek, you know.
Yeah, but it's still good to get that good bacteria in our gut as well.
Well, thank you so much for chatting again today. This is always so informational, and I love hearing updates and things that are going on within the industry. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's very good to get to chat and talk about our passions.
I agree. For those of you guys listening, like and share the episode, because we'd like more people to hear about our great topics that we chat about. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.